I call the Senate Health Social Services Committee to order at 1:31 p.m. Monday, April 8th. We are meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee members present are Senator Begich, Senator Coghill, Senator Geisel, Senator Stevens, and myself, Senator Wilson. This afternoon, we will return to Senate Bill 1, the Repeal of Certificate of Need Program. On March 27th, we heard an overview of the bill, adopted a work draft, and took invited testimony from subject matter experts. On April 1st, we heard additional invited testimony, took public testimony, and we set this bill aside. At this time, I would like to offer an amendment, that being Amendment Number 1, Senator Coghill.
Why don't I go ahead and move Amendment Number 1, which is M.1.
All right, and I object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Zepp, if you could come forth and state your name and give an overview of Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Gary Zepp, staff to Senator David Wilson. And in your packet, you should have an amendment, as Senator Coghill referred to, as well as a second page, which is from Legislative Legal, which gives a legislative opinion on the amendment. Amendment M1 provides, let me back up for a second. The last time that we met, Senator Begich brought up a very good point for clarification purposes, is if Senate Bill 1 in its current form passed the legislature, what would happen to the regulations? Would they be null and void? What would fill that gap? And this amendment fills that gap and clarifies that Amendment M1 is a transition for regulations. And what it does is it allows and encourages the Department of Health and Social Services to adopt regulations necessary to implement the changes made by Senate Bill 1 so that on July 1st, 2024, the regulations would be in place and ready to be effective.
Yes, and we're sorry about the late notes and the copy of the legal opinion. We're going to get a copy of that to all the folks here. If so, just didn't know if all members had it.
Yep.
Okay. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Gary, my question, I just want to confirm it. So what this would do, the way that this amendment, as you understand it, is written, if we end up repealing a certificate of need, but we have regulation enacted that deals with certificate of need issues, those regulations will still be in effect even though the statute itself has been removed. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, our advice from Legislative Legal is that is absolutely correct.
That was my question.
Yeah. Any other questions? All right, with that, I will move my objection. Is there maintain objection? Yes. All right, thank you. With that, we'll Amendment Number 1 is adopted. Is there further amendments? Seeing none, are there any final questions on the bill?
Just a comment.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to thank Gary for also getting me the information I asked for in terms of I asked about rural hospital closures in North Dakota and in Idaho when we were last together. He did provide me that information, and to his knowledge, since the certificate of need programs were abolished, there wasn't rural hospital closure. Is that correct? Could I just double check with him? That's what I read anyway.
For the record again, Gary Zepp, staff to Senator Wilson. Through the chair, Senator Begich, that is correct.
So I just wanted to thank you, Gary, for providing that information to my office. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Is there a motion to move this bill from committee? Senator Coghill?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 1, version M as amended from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, CS for Senate Bill 1, version M as amended, will move from committee with the understanding that Legislative Legal is authorized to make any necessary technical and conforming adjustments. With that, we'll take a brief at ease to sign some documents. At this time, we'll turn to Senate Bill 58, repeal of senior benefits payment program by Senate rules on behalf of the governor. This is our first time hearing the bill. We'll have a brief overview of the bill and sexual analysis and take public testimony. Here in the room to present the bill on behalf of the administration is Ms. O'Brien, the Director of Division of Public Assistance. We'll welcome Ms. O'Brien to the microphone and remind her to place her name and affiliation on the record. And we understand that the commissioner is traveling on state business and is unavailable for today's presentation.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Shonda O'Brien. I am the director for the Division of Public Assistance. So attached to the bill are two fiscal notes that highlight reductions to the program in the senior benefits component, as well as a reduction to staffing levels for the administration of the program. So the fiscal note in the public assistance field services component represents the administrative costs to run the program. These are eligibility staff who do the eligibility determinations and case review for the recipients in the program. There are also some minimal costs for printing warrants and sending out notifications that you'll see in the services line also. The other fiscal note is the benefits themselves, and they reside in the senior benefits program component.
Okay. Director O'Brien, can you give a little bit of a background or history of how this bill came up, the reasoning for this bill, and why we're hearing it?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The governor's budget proposed to reduce or eliminate the program entirely. So in the governor's amended budget, this program, there's a decrement to the funding sources in the senior benefits component. And so in order to implement that reduction, we would need to pass the bill in eliminating it from statute.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Senator Stevens.
I think I need a better explanation of who it impacts, what it does to people.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, in your packet there are some handouts that kind of go over the program itself. There is some demographic information in there about who's being served and by which payment category that they're being served in. So in your packet, there are, I believe, three handouts. One of them, it looks like this. It's the Senior Benefits Program Overview. That overview really just gives you some very high-level facts about how the program is being administered, who it serves, what some of the eligibility criteria are for participating in the program, as well as income limits and things of that nature. It's a three-page document which goes on to then give you some historical information about the different payment tiers and then also kind of where the population being served resides based on the census area. And so on page three, you'll see the recipients statewide as of December. And then it goes on to give you kind of a history of the program since its inception in 1972.
Follow up, Senator?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we have those documents before us, but I assume we have the public listening. We'd like to know more, so I just think we need a fuller explanation of the impact of the public.
Definitely. Okay. So through the chair, Senator Stevens, to address that, we have so this year in the program, you'll see that the benefit tiers represented are $76 a month, $125 a month, and $275 a month. And so, $250 a month. And so right now the population that we're serving is about just under 12,000 people total. The funding for the program has been insufficient to fully fund all three tiers of the program. And so you'll see that this year we have that lowest payment tier is $76 a month to address that insufficient level of funding. And there's a couple of different reasons that we're seeing that. We review eligibility each year and the criteria for that eligibility changes, you'll see that different income levels will be adjusted, and some folks that may have been in different payment categories are now in other payment categories, which bump some of those costs up annually. And so we're not seeing a significant growth in the number of people that are eligible in the program. It's stayed pretty consistent over the years. However, we are just seeing a little bit more cost in the higher payment categories of this program. And so one of the other handouts that you have breaks that information down just a little bit further. And so it's a one-page document, and it just has for you the summary level of how many recipients there are in each of those different payment categories. It also gives you some demographics on the counts by age or gender. So right now, as I mentioned, we have about just under 12,000 recipients in the program. The majority of the recipients of that program are female versus the male genders, and then we have all the different age categories within each of those payment tiers. So we serve people from the age of 65, and as of our last data run, our oldest recipient is over the age of 85. So just a little bit more information about the different eligibility categories. So for example, to be eligible for the program, there are different categories of income that you're allowed to have. And included in those different categories of income, we look at things such as your assets. Your savings are not counted. However, other assets may be counted. The income limits change annually, as I mentioned, based on the federal poverty level. And then payments are not available to any seniors living in any of the following institutions: prison or jail, the Alaska Pioneer Home or the Veterans Home, a nursing home, or a private institution for mental disease.
Chairman.
All right, Senator Keiko.
Part of the disadvantage of being around here for so long is, if I remember correctly, this came out of a debate on the longevity bonus some time ago. And it was a compromise put together that it would be a needs-based, which the longevity bonus was based on time in Alaska, and the senior benefit then became a needs-based. Part of the argument at that point was we had adult public assistance. And the criteria, if I remember correctly, for adult public assistance is different than this. But maybe, Shonda, you can answer the question, how many are receiving both? And it will be a hit to those on fixed income. And it'll be interesting to note how many are receiving both and what that might, how that might impact them and what we can do about it.
Sure. So, Senator Coghill, through the chair, you're correct. We do have populations in this program that are being served by multiple programs. Most commonly, recipients of senior benefits would be eligible in some cases for the Adult Public Assistance Program, as well as for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or otherwise known as food stamps. We do have some recipients who receive energy assistance benefits through the LIHEAP program. And then there are also recipients who may be receiving supplemental security income from the Social Security Administration, which we don't administer, but is also sometimes the case. There are approximately 3,000 people as of December 2018 who are just receiving senior benefits only. So out of that entire population that we're serving, there's only about 3,000 who don't receive other benefits.
Home Center?
No, I think that'll be helpful, because that means that there are somewhere around 10,000 that are getting other benefits, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, it would be somewhere closer to, I would, if I'm guessing correctly, the numbers would be somewhere around 8,000, between 8,000 and 9,000.
All right. Okay, because I see 9. Looked like I had 12 or 13,000. Okay, so that's total recipients. And, oh, okay, so, yeah, you would subtract them. All right. Yeah, that's about right.
Any other questions? Senator Baggage?
Yeah, I'm I'm just troubled. I'm going to have a few questions, Mr. Chairman, but I'm not sure that they can be answered. They may end up being more rhetorical. I'll try not to make them too rhetorical. You know, I see the service array available to seniors as some way of maybe alleviating for us the concern about getting rid of this program, but you mentioned earlier that the number of folks on the higher tiers, which are the tiers that are the ones most in need, you have to be most in need, have gone up. Is that correct?
Yes.
So we're talking about, over time, more people slipping into the higher need program, and yet this is a program we're just going to eliminate. That's the idea, get rid of it. And it's for me, it's a philosophical issue. It's really a debate. As Senator Von Imhoff perhaps put it best in finance, it's not a question of the money available, it's a question of the priorities. At least that's what I heard her say the other day in finance about these various issues. So it's the department's priority that this program be cut. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, so as the department was reviewing areas in which we have general funds that are not tied to federal dollars, whereby we have a little bit more flexibility in how we implement or what approvals we would have to get in order to implement those reductions. This program being a state-funded program only without any federal money tied to it tends to be looked at more closely, even though the impact is significant.
Right. I guess one follow-up.
Senator Begich?
You can understand my reluctance to support this kind of bill, then, I hope, because I think that this is the wrong tack toward dealing with an issue of fiscal, what the fiscal responsibility of the state is, both by the Constitution and by statute. The longevity bonus program existed for many, many years prior to its repeal and replacement in 2003 by the very compromise that Senator Coghill described. You know, we have for 2 years in this committee, last 2 years, listened to testimony after testimony in support of the senior benefits program and the impact it has on lives. We have rejected the increases to the program that have been requested. And so I'm not placing this on you. This is not directed at you. But I simply will not find myself supporting this bill or this particular effort by the administration to solve the perceived fiscal crisis. This is, at least I will be adamantly opposed to this. So I just want to let you know that. Thank you.
Senator Coghill.
The senator brings up a good point, and that is, if this is a reduction, and I think we have to be really careful. First of all, I think I'm a senior, but I don't fit the category here.
I am not.
So if we reduce this, knowing that all of these people are on some kind of fixed income and probably most of them are on some status, will the reduction in this number raise the payment capacity, or does it change their eligibility in other arenas? I think it'll be nice for us to know if there's a refinancing capacity here, if there's a way to alleviate some that really need it, or is this the last stop?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Coghill. So the first part of your question, I believe, is about eligibility for other programs. More about, by eliminating the funding for this program, some of those recipients may be eligible for an increased benefit in their food stamp benefit or even in their adult public assistance benefit. So we'll be looking at the eligibility for the entire population that we're serving at that time. So if the program is eliminated July 1st, we will be doing eligibility redeterminations to review either for folks who have existing food stamp benefits or adult public assistance benefits to adjust as necessary. And so that is going to be an increased body of work that we're preparing staff for now.
So, Mr. Chairman, that'll be something that I'll be interested in. There's a couple things that are that attract me to this, and one of them is we'll probably need less state workers because we're on one end of the building, we're writing a checks for adult public assistance, and on the other end of the building, we're writing checks to this. And that was my original complaint about this whole thing to begin with. rather than having the same people do the same eligibility, take care of those who are in fixed incomes. And it seems like that's the way we're headed. It's painful. I get it. It's painful. But if we could combine the benefit, making sure that we don't leave people high and dry, and really, if, and I think on all of our minds are making sure we don't do harm to those who live in an escalating healthcare environment and a declining cash capacity. I think it's going to be important we don't leave them high and dry. But at the same time, if we can do it with less government, you know, and still take care of them, I'm probably disposed to thinking this might be okay. So I'll be listening to the public testimony on that. But I think on those eligibility issues, it's going to be important that that we take care of those majority who already have other public assistance needs. Maybe there's some way we can figure this thing out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just as a follow-up to that, Mr. Bryan, did the administration, did they look at sort of what Senator Codkill sort of recommend or his idea there, just combining senior benefits within the adult public assistance program just for more efficiencies or just cost savings that wouldn't be impacted to the seniors?
So if I understand you correctly, Mr. Chair, you're talking about rather than having distinct separate programs, that we would look at just having one program that serves the same population in both areas. Is that what you're referring to? Or are we looking at, if we're looking at how we're doing the eligibility work itself, that's a different topic, and I can speak to either. I wanted to clarify.
Yeah, just as a way of having a sort of a subset of a program within adult public assistance where someone that may be a senior would qualify for an additional benefit.
Okay, so the adult public assistance program is really, the purpose of that program is to satisfy federal requirements for serving the aged, blind, and disabled. And so it has a different demographic need than the senior benefits program. Some of the same population is being served through both programs by nature of some of that criteria. But the aged, blind, disabled program is administered through the Social Security Administration and is also used to satisfy our maintenance of effort requirement to receive Medicaid funding. The senior benefits program has a distinctly different purpose, and so to the extent that both populations have crossover, there are people that we're serving in both, but to have it become a subset of the adult public assistance program would require, we would have to partner with the Social Security Administration to find out how we could expand or if we could even expand on the rules and the regulations around that program to include another tier of recipients. And I'm not familiar enough with that process to speak very well to answer that question.
Plausible.
It's always worth asking.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I do remember the longevity bonus issue, and I do remember the turmoil that it caused the legislature to go into, because everyone received longevity bonus, right? If you were 65 or older, it didn't make a difference what your income was, as I believe. Because I remember the wife of a bank president being really angry with me over taking that away from her. So it was very hard for the legislature to deal with this, but everyone was angry with us who was over 65 or whatever the age was. Fewer people will be angry over this, but still they will be upset. So it was very hard going to a needs-based. I think it it probably makes sense, but the issue that Senator Cockhill brought up of if we eliminate this, are there other issues that people will be eligible for? And I realize there'd be a lot of work, but can you tell us that eventually? I mean, is a study being done so we will know what the real implications are? If this is gone, what is the implication for other programs?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, so we are preparing to do that work now. We know the population that there is crossover with already, so those cases will be very easy to look at and do that determination. For the recipients who are only receiving senior benefits, the 3,000 recipients that we know of, in order for them to be considered or determined eligible for other programs, they would need to apply for those other programs. So at the time that we send notifications out, letting the entire recipient pool know that the program is no longer going to be in the budget or depending on how things play out, as we look at implementing that reduction, we'll notify for everyone. And so that way, if they are eligible or want to be considered for other programs, then we would look at them at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what you're saying is that it'd be pretty difficult to predict that at this point. You're saying the only way to know is to implement the removal of the program and then find out what the results would be.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, so for the population that is already receiving benefits under the other two programs, we will automatically be looking at their eligibility to adjust anything that would require an adjustment to those benefits. So, for example, if someone's receiving benefits under the SNAP program, a loss in income from the senior benefits program would, in most cases, make them eligible for an increase to their food stamp program. What that amount is will be dependent on each person, so eligibility will have to be reviewed for each case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was looking forward to the longevity bonus, but just missed it, huh? Thank you.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you're doing that research, Director, could you examine with those populations the impacts of all of these cuts that are affecting a senior population instead of doing just an isolated one here, an isolated one there? Because it appears to me that there are certain, clearly it appears the most vulnerable populations that will be impacted by multiple cuts. And I think we should know that if we're going to make decisions about whether or not we should take, you know, services away from somebody, we should know exactly, not in isolation, mm-hmm. but direct impacts of what these are and the implications. So is that okay?
Yes, through the chair. We have some examples that we've prepared already just at a very high level. Eligibility is fairly complex, and each individual's situation will have a different determination. But we do have some examples prepared that I can share with the committee that kind of give you what each of those reductions that are in the budget would do to a person receiving all of the benefits, and then also a couple for folks who might only be on one or two of the programs, just because we were curious to know kind of what that impact would be and also to kind of prepare for the work that we know will be coming as a result.
And follow up?
Yes.
I'm not sure if this is relevant or if I have my facts incorrect or not, but there are no facts because I don't know if they're correct or not. So, but Medicaid eligibility as well, you'd be looking at that and whether or not proposed cuts to Medicaid would have an impact on these populations, those kinds of things?
Yes, through the chair, we are also including the Medicaid reductions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Bryan, is there a hold harmless clause for senior benefits for any other type of eligibility for any other type of public assistance?
No, Mr. Chair, if you're speaking about the permanent fund hold harmless provisions.
Is there something similar to that with senior benefits?
There is not.
Okay. All right, with that, we do have quite a few folks signed up online. I'm going to try to take them in the order that they called in. For those that are online that wish to submit, who would like to submit their written testimony, just want to let you know you can email the HESS committee at senate.hss@akleg.gov. With that, we'll go ahead and thank you, Ms. Director O'Brien. And we'll go ahead and open public testimony. We'll start here in the room in Juneau, and we'll call Ms. Lorelei Swanson up. And as she approaches, we want to let folks know that we will plan 2 minutes for your testimony, as though we have a lot. We just want to make sure we can get through everybody today, because we just plan to do the day of testimony here for today. And then you'll be followed by Vicki Jo Kennedy. And you may begin when ready.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wilson and members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. My name is Laurelyn Swanson. I live in Juneau, and I have managed Fireweed Place, an apartment building for seniors, for 25 years. I've also served on the Alaska Medical Care Committee, Advisory Committee, and the Juneau Commission on Aging. I am here today to ask that you allow the senior benefits program to continue by not passing SB 58 and repealing the program. I also ask that when you are in budget deliberations, you ensure that the program is fully funded in the operating budget. Through much work on the part of senior advocacy groups, of which I was a part of, and working closely with the Alaska legislature, the initial senior care program was established in response to Governor Murkowski's budget cut to the longevity bonus program in 2003, which supported all Alaskans 65 and older with a payment of $250 per month. At that time, it was recognized there was an absolute need to offer financial assistance and support for a portion of the senior population. That basic need has continued, and the state's support has evolved over the years to what is now a three-tiered needs-based program for Alaska seniors. The senior benefits program is designed to assist those senior adults 65 years of age or older and who fall under the federal poverty limit for income and who are among some of the most vulnerable seniors in our state. Currently, there are approximately 11,597 Alaska seniors on the Senior Benefits Program. Please help put a stop to the growing anxiety that is overtaking the state. Alaskan senior citizens, your constituents, and others throughout the state that depend on this program for basic essentials are fearful that a portion of their financial security will be eliminated in the 3 months' time. Please work to ensure that senior benefits program is fully funded in the budget and that SB 58 does not pass the Senate. And I thank you for allowing me to speak. And if I may add just one other thing. Tier 1, which is the highest tier they get, I believe $200 or $175, will take a 26% cut in income if you put this program into effect.
Thank you. Next up is Vicki Jo Kennedy. And then we will go to the Kenai LIO with Bob Harrison.
Hi, my name is Vicki Jo Kennedy, and my home is Kodiak Island, but I've currently been in Juneau for about 16 months. Don't like what I always see in this city, but here it is. I am totally opposed to Senate Bill 58, and I do know it's going to affect a lot of seniors, and I was going to be one of those seniors this year, and I was really going to count on that. I currently live on $279 a month. By the grace of God, I got HUD housing. I just think this program, Ms. Lorelei's right, it's going to affect a lot of the most vulnerable people there are. I think you could maybe skinny the program down on a really as-needed basis. I mean, really needed it, but the longevity bonus was, when the money was flowing, it was a great program. Everybody got it, but the money's not there no more. So, but I do think you could look a little harder at the adult public assistance program. I know some young people that are on that because they have disabilities, but sadly enough, federally and statewide, you can be a severe alcoholic or even a drug addict and be qualified as disabled. And that's just not right a lot of times. So look harder at the Adult Public Assistance Program and just think about the seniors out there. And I appreciate your time and all the hard work I know you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to Bob Harrison, the Kenai LIO, before we go to the Anchorage LIO for Charles McKee.
Hi. I'm Bob Harrison with the Kiske Senior Center. I'm representing myself. And I thank you, gentlemen, for taking this testimony. I'm a Nikiski senior on a fixed income, receiving the benefit of this program. Many others are benefited by the program and need it more than I. It's a solid fact that seniors are the most vulnerable Alaskans to a reduction in income. Cost of living goes up, income remains static or comes down. Previous monetary benefits for seniors were eliminated by an earlier legislature, which you gentlemen have discussed, and myself and my wife are both recipients of that. And as one party said, P people were a little upset about it. Let me tell you, we were. At the time, it was my understanding that benefits would continue, just restructured. Seniors are a valuable resource to their communities. They volunteer. In my case, I mentored at a junior high school, did AARP taxes for 10 years, drove the VA van to the clinic for 10 years. Please find another way to take care of cuts and keep this program viable. Recommend no. Vote no. Thank you, folks, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison. Next is going to the Anchorage LIO for Charles McKee, followed by Javen OC.
Yes, I'd like to reiterate that, yes, my name is Charles McKee. I have some paperwork I'd like to submit to the body. It's a 34-page. The Supreme Court of Alaska ruling pertaining to ratepayers on the intertie from Homer to Fairbanks. Seniors are included in that. I might point out I am one of them. This bill before you is simply crumbs off the subjugated SESTA Key Trust account that the Bar Association through the Judicial Review and the State of Alaska Public Corporation that they own control. And unless you do the proper paperwork and claim your trust and take it away from them, up until that time, they utilize the credit side of the double book ledger for their own gain. It's a fraudulent, and I'd like to submit this paperwork, and I'd already brought it to the attention of the Alaska Regulatory Commission because they were appealing. I got this information because my workers' comp case is also being worked on at the appeal court division of the state Supreme Court. The clerk, being a trustee of the trust, collectively, individually and collectively, and then the executor is the judge or judges. And so they are the ones perpetrating the fraud for the Bar Association, who ultimately are the ones to appoint the judges for the selection of appointment by the CEO. You refer to him as the governor of the public corporation called the State of Alaska.
Mr. McKee, if you could wrap up your comments, your time has...
That's different from Alaska. I might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McKee. Next up is Javen Osi, followed by DJ Blanchard.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for letting me testify. I'll try to keep my emotions in check. So you want to take my money away, huh? This would be the second time. I suggest that if you have time in your walking from chamber to chamber to look outside the building and see what the people are saying about it outside the building. I know what the feeling is inside the building. You want to take my permanent fund? Et cetera, et cetera. Well, I represent myself. Like you said, my name is Javen Osi. I got here in 1956 in the territorial days. I worked my whole life here for small change, an average of about $10 an hour. I have currently $12,000 income from Social Security. You guys make that in 1 month. 1 month you make that. And per diem, in one session, you make as much money as I make in 1 year. I worked hard I should have worked harder, but I don't know how. I worked for $2.25 in the Arctic North Slope on a seismic crew, 16 hours a day just to see the Arctic. Let's go back to the Senate bill. I'm not in favor of it, of course. And one other quick one here. The low-income heating assistance program. What a shame. In a state where the people are supposed to own their own resources, we get the privilege of paying the highest natural gas prices and gasoline in the United States, where we're supposed to be the people who own it. Stop selling it on the market and take oil in kind and give these people a break, not only on their own resources, but their utilities. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska, since the year 2000, has raised rates 320%. My natural gas bill requires me to sign up for low-income heating assistance.
Mr. Jamin, if you could wrap up your
That's about all I have to say. I'm trying to keep myself in check here from profanity, but thank you for what you do. Look outside and listen to the people outside that building.
Thank you. Thanks, sir. Next, we have DJ Blanchard. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, and followed by a Delise Calcote.
Good day. Thank you for listening, giving us a chance to be heard. Tom, I want to thank you for what you said. I appreciate it and feel like, geez, I got a vote in there somewhere. Let's say, because everything I've come up against in Alaska has not been for the people. I'm against the bill, needless to say. We've worked all our lives. I've worked up to 4 jobs at one time, juggling them with 9 children. And all my children are successful at what they do. They're not the President of the United States, but they would be appalled at this kind of bill passing. And I would appreciate what Jay said, is look outside the box instead of inside where you're sitting. Our people have a great big impact, and the elders are the ones that set the trail. We're the ones that brought you guys to the gold and all the other resources, especially the oil. So we would appreciate the crumbs that you are trying to deny us, which are rightfully ours anyway. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Delise Calcote, followed by Ken Hollander. Denise, if you could state your name for the record, and you may begin when ready.
My name is Delise Marie Calcote. I, too, am against this bill. I work for the tribes of Alaska. This is not good. There's a lot of the elders that don't get help. How many elders have been handed out that information? I never even knew about it. I'm a year into my senior age. No one has, I haven't gotten any kind of mail. There's no, I know that there's a senior center, your agency, the Boulder Alaska Commission. I don't agree with this taking away. That's our own account. You shouldn't be limiting what we should have. Poverty is a sin. I don't appreciate any kind of governmental attitude to keep people in poverty. Wrong. Thank you. Please do your job. Listen to the people. And I send stuff out to the tribes, just so you know.
All right, next we have Ken Hollander, and then we'll go to the Homer LIO for Jim Hornaday.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Ken Hollander. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP Alaska. I'm here to speak in opposition to the governor's bill to repeal the Senior Benefits Program. Two summers ago, as the Senior Benefits Program was up for authorization, Representative Sponholz and then Representative Kawasaki held an informal listening session on behalf of the House HHS Committee. For 3 hours, more than 50 people called in from every part of the state to talk about what the Senior Benefits Program means for them. My takeaway from hearing their comments was that this money, as small an amount as it is used by each recipient within their own life situation to help them live independently with purpose, to maintain their own health, and ultimately to make a difference in the community of people around them. One woman called to say that her $76 a month allowed her to keep her car running. She said she was the only one in her circle of friends who still had a car. With that car, she was able to meet not only her own transportation needs, but also to help her friends and neighbors who needed to get to the doctor, to the grocery store. In fact, she was the transportation system for her individual community. Others told similar stories, stories that reflect each beneficiary's determination, not just to get a pittance of support from the state, but more importantly, to always try to be a help to the people around them, to be part of that solution. Because if her car were to become inoperable, many people would have lost transportation. Many would not be able to get to the store to buy the food that their own benefit allowed for them and that they used to make and share meals with their own individual community. She might be the nutrition program for the people around her, or the one to visit the sick and the lonely, or to get to church or volunteer work. This isn't about a handout. It's about an investment that allows older, albeit materially poor Alaskans, to prevent being poor in spirit. They are already getting the last of what the state has available to them, the bottom rung before becoming inevitably more expensive if they can no longer be on their own. The Senior Benefits Program is an investment with great return that we should carefully protect, because the cost of losing it would be ever so much greater. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hollander. Next, we'll go to the Homer LIO with Jim Hornaday.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jim Hornaday. I live in Homer. I'm speaking for myself today, but I also belong to the Senior Citizens Board, the College Board, and the Bay Reserve Board. I would speak in opposition to the repeal of the senior bill. I'm afraid these are the most needy people, and I'm afraid if you cut it out, that a number of people will miss meals. Also, please don't close our schools. Please don't close our college campuses. I would urge you to consider revenues rather than just cutting. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Next, we'll go to Delta Junction LIO with Art Griswold, and then we'll go to the Ketchikan LIO.
Gentlemen, this is Art Griswold in Delta Junction. I am a senior. I'm 85 in 10 days. The thing is that I'm talking for myself and my wife, but also my wife and I were very active in the seniors' housing program here. I know the needs of the people. We also bring the food boxes down for seniors, so on and so forth. I drive that truck every Saturday, third Saturday of the month. But what I'm saying is you cut this program, it's not just that few dollars that you're cutting off each one. It's double that because they depend on it to survive. We have a number of people in the senior housing who could not even afford to stay in senior housing. We have a number of people who depend on those food boxes and depend on that money to fulfill the rest of their needs. So their money is necessary. Don't cut this program no matter what you do.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Grunewald. Next, we'll go to Ketchikan with Ginger Fortan. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony.
Hello, this is Ginger Fortan. I belong to a group of people with traumatic brain injury, most of whom are unable to go out and work. I'm testifying for all of us. Most of us are seniors who depend on the senior benefits program. Governor, when you're cutting benefits, why do you cut them from the most needy? We're unable to get out and work, and we're doing the best we can and really need the senior benefits program. Please keep it in place. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to the Rango LIO with Rosemary.
Good afternoon. My name is Rosemary Ruoff. I am representing SELF, and I am opposed to Bill 58. What I will say is not profound. It's not anything that you haven't heard before. You need to understand that you are younger, and you're not walking in the same shoes as older folks, so you can't feel what we feel. You receive a salary every month or every week, and you live on the fat of the land. There are those of us who do not. And I speak from personal experience. Even being willing to try to go out there and find a little something that would supplement my income, I can tell you that when you get gray hair and when you get wrinkles, nobody wants you. You may be available for employment, but nobody wants you when you get older. I just look at how difficult it is to stretch a dollar each month. I just look at what it costs to eat in our town, to go to the grocery stores. Inflation is here like a roaring lion. A dollar buys very, very little. When I consider the cost of living, and now I'm in that category where I need medications, it's expensive. The money that comes through this senior benefit program is certainly not only appreciated, not only is it important, but it is vitally important. Why would you take from those who so desperately need it? People who are not in a good position to supplement their income. These people have a need, a genuine need. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next, we'll go to the off-net with Albert from Shimsharaf, and I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name, Albert.
Yes, good afternoon. It's Ningaluk, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Albert Ningaluk, and I'm from Shimsharaf, and I am testifying on my own behalf and also for many other seniors who would have the chance to testify. And right now, there are many seniors in Alaska who pioneered, helped Alaska grow, and made our state of Alaska as it is today, so that our governor will come to appreciate all the sacrifices, work, and dedication that even his own grandfather and father-in-law participated in and offered. Although we're from different groups of Alaskans in our state, we share and honor our elders and seniors who really deserve to be helped financially. Terminating the senior benefits will be like purposely taking away money from many seniors who are really dependent on the senior benefits program to survive in their well-deserved golden years. Living in Alaska, especially here in Shishmaref, is very hard. Many seniors need the senior benefits program, especially if a loaf of bread costs about $4 for one loaf and a gallon of heating fuel is about $5 a gallon. So the senior benefits program is really a big help to many seniors in this village and also in throughout the rural Alaska villages in our state. And I hope that the legislature and the governor will come to understand that the program is really needed. And I was listening to the lady who I believe was the director saying that if the program is taken away, they can transfer or move away, that the senior benefits program would have been used for to the food stamp program. How can food stamp recipients buy medicine? Because I know many seniors use the benefit program check each month to buy medicine. So thank you very much for allowing me to testify, and I'm testifying in opposition of Senate Bill 58. Thank you.
Thank you, Albert. Next up, we have David Blackinter, followed by Jonathan Strong.
Yeah, this is David Blackinter. I live in Kodiak. We have for 23 years. I'm speaking on my behalf and also on behalf of the Alaska Commission on Aging. First, I'd like to share about myself. We get the one-tier where we get my wife and I each get $76 a month. That was reduced a couple, 3 years ago from $125. We adjusted and we're doing okay. But one thing that we do with need the senior benefits for was really helpful is that our rent is due the first month. My Social Security is a third of the month. The rent is due the first, and if the landlord doesn't get it, there's a penalty. So we use the $150, $2 collectively that we get to pay the rent on time. Also, for emergencies like the last 3 months, I've had to have my car repaired twice. But anyway, we thank you for that. But then on the side of the Commission on Aging, I'm the past immediate chair of the Commission on Aging, and I've been requested by the chair, Gordon Glasser, to say that this, both myself and the Commission on Aging, we definitely want you to say no to this Senate Bill 58. And I'm kind of amazed last year, almost wholeheartedly, the Senate and the legislature, the House of Representatives, passed HB 236, which extended the senior benefits bill because it was to be sunsetted this year. But they extended it for 6 years unanimously, plus restored the top tier, or the tier we're in, to a full amount. And I just find it strange. I know it's a different governor. I'm not casting stones. But the thing is, I find it strange that you folks are wanting to do a total 180, giving us hope, but now you're trying to take it away. Please vote no on Senate Bill 58. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. We have Jonathan Strong, followed by John Asada.
Good afternoon, committee members, chairperson, and director. My name is Jonathan Strong with Senior Citizens of Kodiak, and I am the program director for our Adult Day and Day Habilitation Program. And somebody was referred to us, a senior, and they had been known to panhandle and even at times shoplift some basic needs here at the stores in the community. Once that person turned 65 years old a few months ago, I was able to assist them in applying for the senior benefits. And this person did receive the top tier amount, $250 per month, which has changed their life, really has changed their life dramatically. They're able to buy basic needs, chapstick, lotion, you know, weather-appropriate clothing, things like that. This person had not had a haircut in years, and so this person was on adult public assistance before, but the benefit was $1 a month, and they were not receiving any SNAP food program benefits. So the senior benefit really took this person and put them in a whole new quality of life area. So really, I appreciate your support of this program. Please do not vote for SB 58. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up is John Asada, and then we come back to Juno with Ms. Jane.
Good afternoon, Senate Committee members. My name is John Asada. I'm the Policy Director for the Alaska Primary Care Association. We support the operation and development of Alaska's 27 federally qualified health centers. Our Alaska health centers voted to oppose cuts to and the elimination of the senior benefits program. Hold on. Am I on mute? Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
We can hear you. Please continue, sir.
Okay, sorry about that. We wanted to, again, focus in particular on how the bill would affect the social determinants of health of patients. Social determinants of health are the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age, and include financial resources, food security, and access to affordable housing. While modest in size, the senior benefit program provides basic income. We fear that if the program is cut, that seniors who use the benefit to support medication and other health expenditures who have chronic conditions will end up in emergency rooms and in higher acuity emergency settings that will raise the cost of care and reduce their health outcomes. Again, we are very fearful about the elimination of the program in addition to the cut in the budget. And we would urge you to vote no on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Next, coming back here to Juno, we'll invite Ms. Andreen up, followed by Ms. Denise Danielio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Jane Andreen. I live in Douglas, and I'm a volunteer with AARP. And I have to share one story. I had a friend I was talking to, a younger woman, who knew I was involved with AARP, and I said I was part of the Red Vest group. She thought I said bed rest group. So I kind of like to think about that. Some days I'd like to just stay in bed. But I'm speaking in opposition to this bill. I think we have to recognize and all know that as we age, we go through a continuum of possible care and living situations. The most cost-effective is the one where we can live independently in our own homes and still be engaged with our daily routines. As we age, sometimes we have to move into these higher cost categories. One of the things that I think is so key to recognize with the senior benefits program is it allows people at the lowest level of income, people that are living below the federal poverty line, to stay independent. And you're hearing from some of those folks in some of the stories now. I really encourage you, especially if you're looking at cost effectiveness, to keep the senior benefits program. As people have said, we've heard a lot of stories over the last 2 years as we've looked at the sunset legislation that was due to expire last June. It is really painful to have to be back here reiterating the importance of this program, but it really impacts the most vulnerable of our population. So thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Ms. Denise.
Thank you very much, Chair Wilson. For the record, my name is Denise Danielo, Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Aging. And for those of you who may not be familiar with the Commission's work, we plan services for seniors. We do the big Alaska State Plan for Senior Services that brings in the federal money for non-Medicaid senior programs. We also educate Alaskans about senior issues, and we advise legislators about the needs of seniors. So in full disclosure, the Commission on Aging views represent the views of our members only and do not necessarily reflect those of this administration. So the Commission does not support Senate Bill 58. We have advocated for the Senior Benefits Program since its inception back in 2007. And we have advocated for the continuation of the program through all of its legislative reauthorization efforts. Financial security is a real serious worry among older people, and I think you've heard a lot of those stories today. In the last senior survey that we did in 2018, people who took the survey who were age 55 and older said that financial economic security was the second most important issue for seniors in Alaska today. It's right behind access to health care. We believe that this program is good public policy. It provides funding directly in the hands of seniors who know best how to spend that money to improve their health and their welfare. Statewide, about one in eight seniors participates in the senior benefits program. So broken down regionally, that numbers are about 13% of people living in Anchorage, age 65 and older, receive senior benefits. 8% of seniors living in the Fairbanks North Star Borough receive senior benefits. 12.5% of seniors living in the Matsu are senior benefit recipients. 16.2% of seniors living in Kodiak receive senior benefits, and about 31%, almost one-third of the seniors living in Nome receive senior benefits. So we thank you for hearing testimony today and for the opinions of people across the state about senior benefits and its value. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we're going to go back to the Anchorage LIO. Next up is Laura Boner, followed by William Harrington.
Hello, committee members. Chairman Laughlin, Vice Chair Coghill, and committee members, my name is Laura Boner. I oppose, I'm retired, and I am speaking for myself. I oppose Senate Bill 58. I've been fortunate that I've never been eligible for the program, even though I am old enough. The repeal of the senior benefits program would cause those who are vulnerable to fall further into poverty. Many are women who worked in low-paying jobs or jobs that didn't pay into Social Security, left employment to care for children or a disabled loved one, but it affects men and veterans, too, of both genders. I ask you, can you live on $1,000 per month, especially if you're also battling a chronic illness or condition? What would you choose to pay for? Life-saving meds, rent, heat, transportation, or food? Malnutrition is all too common in the senior population anyway. It's unconscionable to eliminate this program and other programs that self-promote, yet allow for tax credits for the wealthiest corporations in the world. There's been little or no analysis on how SB 58 will impact those who need the benefit. I missed the presentation of this bill in this hearing, but I heard it presented in the House, the companion bill HB 60. The presenters said it was easier to cut this program than other programs. Senate Bill 58 definitely hurts those who receive benefits. It's not good for Alaskans. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, but please kill this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Next up is Mr. Harrington.
Oh, William Harrington here, 70 years old, and here before you pipeline booms. For a government so rich and so foolish in its spending, grain silos, anyone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to stomp on the ability of the most vulnerable of our society to live healthy and independently is reprehensible. I do not qualify for these benefits, nor am I one of those standing in line at that church on Northern Lights Boulevard for 2 hours for a box of food in all weather. Very third world. It is morally reprehensible to abandon our elderly population, and I would not want that on my conscience on Judgment Day. Just kidding. There is no Judgment Day. So this day, this budget, this opportunity to show humanity is all we have. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we have Mary Ann Burke, followed by Gary McDonald. Ms. Burke, if you...
This is Mary Ann Burke. I'm a kids off speaker here. My dad, Ron Ross, came to us a year ago, and he had hardly any Social Security money, and he had severe dementia.
So he's also type A personality. So we had to try to deal with his personality of I'm in control of my life and I want to go back to Ohio and be in my motorhome and take off again. And of course, he had been hospitalized about 7 times due to the dementia and diabetes. So we had to take care of him, but he was very difficult. He had hardly any Social Security money. It was actually a little under 600, but he was saving that to go back to Ohio, and we could not pry it from his fingers. But we applied with the senior benefits, and my dad was there, and we got that money, $250, to help us to take care of him. And there's food, there's medication, there's clothes, there's all the things that he needed that helped us to take care of him until recently he, by a miracle, got into a wonderful assisted living program. And now they're using the money because he's on the lowest end of what he can contribute to their home. So I am very appreciative of the senior benefit program. The other issue is that Medicaid, we could not get on Medicaid for a year. Dad had this worthless piece of land and this motorhome that was filled with filth and urine due to the dementia that was worth practically nothing, but Medicaid would not let us get him on Medicaid. So the senior benefit program cut through all that and just came immediately to us. It was a very, very good benefit. So please don't eliminate that benefit. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Gary McDonald, followed by Herman Morgan. Mr. McDonald, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony, you may begin when ready.
Yep. Gary McDonald. Testimony is just for mainly for me. And I'll be 65 next year, but I'm 64 now, and I'm fighting diabetes real bad, so I'm hoping to make it to 65. But I just want to say, don't pick on the senior citizens, for Pete's sake. That's what our country's founded on, our senior citizens. And I just can't believe some of the things you guys are doing. If you want to do something, get on the food stamp program and all the fraud that's going on there. You make tons of money there. I hate to get on that. But I just want to say I'm against Senate Bill 58 and leave our senior citizens alone. And I wanted to say to all senior citizens out there, we love you, and thanks for what you've done for our country. And it's appalling that we have to have these kind of call-ins. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next up, we have Mr. Herman Morgan, followed by Elizabeth Moe.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for hearing testimony. My name is Herman Morgan. I'm 65 years old. I'm here in Antioch. And in hearing your testimony, you know how hard it's going to hurt people if you cut away these benefits. The same can be said by the way you guys are planning to take away people's permanent fund. You know, it's like you're taking away from the poorest people. I'm asking, why should it be either or? You know, don't cut the senior benefits, but don't cut the permanent fund for the people. Because I was listening to your testimony. We're watching the House session, and they're using the previous governor's budget. They're not using our present governor's budget. They say because the Senate is doing that too, with two wrongs don't make a right. You guys already went through the savings, and now you're going to try to use the permanent fund and cut programs like this. You need to cut the education budget. You know, the lowest test scores in the nation, it's not good. They always say it's good for our kids, but what good is education is if they're lowest in the nation? What good is giving more money to UAA when they lose their creation in education? You know, it's hard out here in rural Alaska. By cutting the permanent fund and programs like this, you drive 25,000 people to live below the poverty level. Out here, a jar of mayonnaise costs $17.99, and we don't have those food programs, so don't cut the senior benefits and don't cut our permanent fund. You know, that's irresponsible. You're hurting the poorest people, not only seniors, but the children. You're taking the money away that they can put away for college and then to use it for more state spending. We thank you guys for taking this minute, but don't only listen to all the lobbyists down there. The school board, they had a this morning, they're going to testify to this evening. Listen to people who don't, who are not state employees. You know, listen to the people who need the money. The same things you're hearing from us seniors, how it hurts, is hurting the poor people who take away their permanent fund. Okay, thank you guys. And now you guys got a tough job, but do what's right. Don't spend all our money on these programs that are not working. This program is working, this senior program, it's helping the seniors, and so is the permanent fund. Give it back to the private economy. It would bring $500,000 to my community, you know. Be responsible. Okay, thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you, Mr. Morgan. Next up is Elizabeth Moe. Elizabeth, are you with us? Are we off of mute?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, Ms. Moe. You may begin with your testimony. State your name for the record, and you may begin.
I'm Elizabeth Moe. I speak on behalf of... Okay. This is Elizabeth Moe. I speak on behalf of myself.
Ms. Moe, you may need to turn off the. Ms. Moe, you may need to turn off the background noise as you're listening to us. We're getting a feedback through the speakers. There we go. Much better.
Okay. Is this better?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My name is Elizabeth Moe. I speak on behalf of myself on the Senior Benefits Program. And I think that you guys are going about this all wrong. I think that seniors are walking, talking encyclopedias. I think that you need to utilize their knowledge. And we have state-of-the-art communications for their communicating to each community. We need to take the oil tax credit and pay all the social services utilizing the seniors' knowledge and taking the other individuals in the community that might need them. And together you can work something out instead of taking away from the very people that built the nation. I think further you need to take those oil tax credits and put them right to where the social services and senior programs are. There is a program called Senior Corps of Retired Executives. I think you may want to go through your state and find out what seniors you have that might fit that category. And then maybe they can help with this management issue that seems to be here at the forefront in Juneau involving funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moe. Next, we'll go to the Homer LIO for Larry Sloan.
Go ahead. State your name.
That's correct. My name is Larry Sloan. I'm representing myself, and I am a senior. I think that you should retain the senior benefits program, but it requires serious modification. It's unquestionable that this program is crucial for the decent quality of life for some individuals who are living on the edge. But for each one of those, I believe that there's also another person who does not fit in that category and who does not really need the funding. People such as myself, for instance, own their own home worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, ample money in the bank, and health care taken care of by the VA. So it's not a crucial need for me, yet I'm still afforded the opportunity to utilize that and have access to it. So, yes, there are people who need it. I'm guessing about one half of the users. The other half of the users are basically just taking money out of the state coffers of the state of Alaska that could be utilized for other more important purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sloan. Not seeing anyone else online. Is there anyone else here in the room in Juneau that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 58? Seeing or hearing none, just want to make a reminder to those that folks that did come in, that did come into Juneau, or those that called to testify, we would take your written comment as well. And you can email that to senate.akleg.gov. That's senate.hss@akledge.gov. With that, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. At this time, we'll just ask Director O'Brien if she would want to come back if there's any other comments or questions for committee members. Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me begin by thanking all the seniors that called in and all the folks that weren't seniors that called in. As I think about it, it might be helpful for them to know something. There are 20 senators in the Alaska Senate. Four of us are seniors. In fact, the oldest three sit on this committee. I'll let you guess who those oldest three are. Two senators, have parents in the Pioneer Home. So we have senior citizens living in the Pioneer Home. Six of the senators in the Alaska Senate are territorial kids. In other words, were born here before we were a state. So I just want to assure those that called in, there is longevity in the Alaska Senate. If my mother were still lucid, she would be calling in today to see this program continue. She's not, so she isn't calling in. But Mr. Chairman, the thing that I'm looking to hear from the department is the ramifications of this repeal. And that's something I'm very disappointed in this administration, offering a policy bill like this without thorough data on its implications to the other programs, to how many people would absolutely lose all kinds of support if we were to repeal this. In fact, I believe, Mr. Chairman, if this bill doesn't pass, then this piece in the budget can go nowhere because we have to have the statutory authority to actually repeal this program. So in any case, Mr. Chairman, I hope that we'll get some information from the department. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to echo, and I have a question for you, Director, but I want to echo the comments made by the Senate President. And some of us were born after territory, but in the state as well. I had a sister who was born in the territory, though. And the question that came up for me during testimony was hearing that it could lead, the cutting of this program and the benefit could lead to the to an impact on independent living, which, of course, places us in the situation where we may face an absolutely greater cost in terms of our ability to support those who would no longer be able to live independently. And we have spent decades moving all of our most vulnerable populations towards independent living, not only because of the dignity involved in living independently, but also because it's actually less expensive to work with your family, live in your neighborhoods, and live at home than to work or to become a ward, if you will, of the state. So when we ask the impact, and this is – I'm not trying to put words into your mouth, Senator Geisel, but I think what – if I'm correct, what we're asking here is, what is the impact then if this happens? We should know before we're asked to make this policy decision. That's sort of a question. Can we get that information? And second, I want to just let the people on the phone know this was not a proposal that came from members of the Senate. There was a number of those who testified who said, you people are doing this. This is a proposal from the governor that we are considering in committee. And hopefully, through deliberation, we'll come up with the right answer. But we need the right information to come up with the right answer. So, Director O'Brien, is there the ability to know some of that information about the impact of taking people off independent living and placing them consequently on the public pay, the public, I don't want to say the dole, that's the wrong word, but putting them on public, greater public assistance, you know, and taking away that independence. Not just the monetary cost, you can't tell us the social cost of that, but there is a monetary cost to it that ought to be quantifiable.
So through the chair, Senator Begich, we are putting together some examples. I think to further address that question, we'll have to get into some detailed case information to try and find some examples of what will happen to, what could potentially happen to some of the individuals who might not be eligible for other programs, for example. As was mentioned, sometimes if a recipient owns their own home, for example, or have other assets that aren't countable as income for other programs, they may not have as many options as maybe others do. I know to be considered for certain assistance programs or living arrangements, you have to liquidate some of your assets. And so some of those scenarios I think we could probably put together for you where it would give a little bit more detailed look at what that impact is and why some of those individuals may or may not make those decisions.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Director O'Brien? Thank you for being here. And again, thank those that testified. And just want to put on the record that some of us can't pick and choose our parents of where we're born. But when I was age, some of us at age 18 bought a plane ticket to come to Alaska. They knew where they wanted to spend their lives. And I hope this is my home for now and forever. And so just want to put that on the record there. With that, there is no other business before us. Is there any other closing comments from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, we don't have any other pending business before the committee at this time. And so the rest of the meetings will be canceled for this week as we await further pending answers from the division on Senate Bill 93. And we will be adjourned at 2:58.